Thank you and good morning, everyone. Yeah, so this talk about the art of text rendering, and I should have specified real-time rendering, because of course, if you want to do text rendering, you have LaTeX. But when you try to do real-time, it's a bit different. And as it has been explained, so yeah, I'm mostly a neuroscience researcher, but I needed to develop some software to do real-time visualization of the data. And then I discovered typography. I say, yeah, okay, it's fine. I just need to put letter one next to each other and the problem solved. And then I discover, well, typography, it's a bit more difficult than just putting glyph next to each other. So actually, there is a lot of rules that you need to enforce if you want to have proper text rendering. And it's a real, well, pain in the ass to do, but you can manage it. And if you don't know the rules, then you, well, you would have garbage on screen. So this is some examples. So this one is called, come from a blog called Not Arabic. So if you read Arabic, you can see this is not Arabic because it did not shape the glyph. So it means it's just garbage for people reading Arabic. And of course, in video games, it just puts some Arabic glyph and say, okay, it will do. Well, it won't. So it's a kind of a problem. The other one is much more recent. It's still active. This is about Unicode. So I will explain what is a Unicode. But before Unicode, you have what is called character set. And when you encoded a text, you needed to know what was the character set. And if you don't do that, then you have a problem because you try to decode, I don't know, ASCII while it's Chinese. And then you, of course, you will have garbage on screen. So it still persists because if you have old text and you try to read it as Unicode, but it's not Unicode, then you got this kind of thing. And of course, you can add some fun. another one, sorry, it's about kerning, which is quite important. Okay, so you see the problem. So kerning, I will also explain, it's when you want to have two letters close to each other because from an aesthetic point of view, it's better. Of course, you have to be careful because with some word, if you have a bad kerning, it's called caming, then you can read, for example, here you have right dick, and of course it was supposed to be a right click. And for example, Apple know very well this problem, and when they have the click on their website, they will add explicitly a space between the C and the L to make sure that it reads click. And for some other, like Rockstar game, just remove the space altogether, and then you have, well, click lovers, surprising facial. So, just to say that if you don't enforce all the rules, then you got this kind of result. And for some software engineer, it's it's fine. I can read the text. So what's the matter? What's the problem? Well, okay, as you can see, there is a lot of problem. So when you look into typography, there is a lot of other terms. I won't explain everything because it's a huge domain. But you have to take into account at least a few things. So the first thing is how your text is encoded. So now for more than 30 years, we have Unicode. Unicode was kind of a revolution because it simplified everything. You can read a text and you don't need to know what is a character set. So before that, you have to know if it was ISO Latin 1 or ASCII or Chinese, or so you have all kind of character set. With Unicode, you can encode every language on the planet. So you have different way to do it. You can use UTF 32, 16 or 8. And the beauty of Unicode, it is compatible with ASCII. So if you have a text encoded in ASCII, you can decode it as Unicode and it will just work, which is nice and avoid a lot of problems. Each year you have a new glyph added to the to the Unicode standard, and then it just grows. So now we have more than 150,000 characters covering 170 languages, which is quite huge. And again, it's only with single encoding. After you read your text, and so you can decode it, then you have to choose a typeface. So it's also called font families. And just to give you some examples of very famous typefaces, they are actually quite old. And of course, they are mostly designed for European language, so of course you cannot render everything using this this kind of typeface, and you need for other code that is not part of your typeface, you need to add other typeface. There are some some effort to try to have one typeface that can render everything. So one example is an auto font, and the idea is that I want to be able to render any language using the same typeface, which is a huge work to do. And the idea is the font is called Noto for no tofu. So tofu, this is when the glyph is not available in your typeface. You got this weird character just saying, okay, I cannot render this this character because it's not part of the typeface. And then you have basic typography. So this is very simple rules. So I already talked about kerning. So kerning is really just aesthetic. So for example, when you have A, V, what you want to do is to have the V a bit closer to the A because it's nicer. So it's it exists in a in a Roman language quite a lot. And so it means that in the typeface, you have explicit instruction to say, oh, when you have A followed by V, just do that. Then you have ligature. So ligature, it's also purely aesthetic. It means that, for example, when you have a double F, you have a specific glyph for the double F. So it will just you replace the two F by this specific glyph. And this is also true for F, I, and some other. Then you have the diacritic mark. And those ones are not aesthetic, they are really important. So it means how you will transform a glyph using some mark. And this is really important in some language. So in maybe in some language it's not that important, but most of the time it's really important. Then you have inting, I will say also a few words. Inting, I will explain, but this is when you have a very small font, you want your font to fit the pixel grid, because it will be nicer to the eye. And then you have all the face matrix. So you have just a few one like the ascender, the cape height, the median, the baseline, and this is how to align text on a line. So you have to take all of this into account. And this is the easy part. Then you have the more advanced stuff. So one is called text shaping, and this is the Arabic example. So for example, you see on black, this is when you don't have shaping, and it's garbage. What you have to do is really to have what is on red on the right. Then you have the alternate style. So again, this is encoded in the typeface. And you have the complex text layout, so again, this is what you got in terms of encoding, and this is what you need to render in red. So this is also quite complex, and of course you can mix language with some are left to right, the other are right to left, and so you have also to take this into account when you render your text. So in the end, it's a lot of rule. And of course you have other form of complex layout, so this morning I'm only talking about text, but of course you can render chemistry, mathematics, or music, and again you have different roles. So now you have your text decoded, you have your font, and okay, what can we do with the font? So if we look into the font formats, mostly you have two types. One is PostScript, which is not used too much anymore, and the other one is TrueType, and mostly it describes each letter with a set of Bezier curves. And just small reminder, what are Bezier curves? So mostly you have 3 points to control the slope of the curve, and what you do as a designer, you just describe your glyph with all these curves, which is kind of a nightmare for a software developer because you don't have good properties. And so, for example, when you want to compute the distance to a Bezier curve, it's not totally easy when it's quadratic. And when it's cubic, it's really, really difficult. But anyway, this is a format. This is a format for encoding glyph, and this is one example when you have Bezier. So this is what you see on screen, and behind you have all the different curves. So when you render a glyph, you have those curves, and your job is to try to render it properly. And inside the font table, you have all the different instructions for the kerning, shaping, glyph replacement, alternate, and everything. And again, this is quite complex format, so we have mostly two libraries. One is FreeType. FreeType is ubiquitous, it's everywhere. So for example, if you look into your mobile phone, you will find probably the license of FreeType inside the system. Halfbuzz, this is the other library that is necessary, and this is a shaping engine. So for example, when you have all the glyph in Arabic, it will give you how to render it. And so if we look at the rendering pipeline, this is how it looks. And for a long time, we had what I call the Latin shortcut. So, oh, you have your text buffer, I have my phone, just render it. And of course, it used to work with ASCII, and for other language, it doesn't work anymore. So really what you have to do is first itemization, so just to recognize which part is, in this case, English, which part is Arabic. You have to reorder, depending on the left to right or right to left. Then you have the shaping, how do you assemble glyphs together. Possibly you have the justification, and there's also huge literature on how to do proper justification. And then finally, you can render your glyph on the screen. Okay, so it's a lot of operation, and you want to do that real time. This is also one of the difficulty. So now we have everything ready, and we want to render a glyph on the screen. So question, how do we do that? So things have changed because now we have GPU, so graphic processing unit, and they are dedicated to graphic rendering. Okay, and so quite early in the end of the 90s, there was a very simple idea. Oh, I will render my glyph on a texture, and then I can display the texture on the screen. So you have to do what you have to do is to rasterize your glyph into a texture, and then you can use it to display. And of course, when you do rasterization, you have a lot of different choice to make, because again, you have continuous Bezier curves that describe your glyph, but you have to display it on the pixel grid. And if you don't have a too high DPI, then you have to fake anti-aliasing on your screen just to have a better shape. And this is a few examples of how you can do the rasterization. So for example, depending on your system, if you're on Windows or Apple, you can recognize how they achieve anti-aliasing on the system. It's quite characteristic. And there's a lot of research behind this, and also a lot of different patterns. And the idea is either you respect the shape of the glyph or you try to enforce the pixel grid. So you have a choice. And with that, you can also play with a lot of things. So of course, you have gamma correction. So this is when you adapt the luminosity for the human perception. You can play with energy distribution. So for example, when you have white text on black, you can change the way it is rendered, depending on luminosity, and you can do the same with black on white. You can enforce inting. So inting, again, this is when you try to fit the glyph onto the pixel grid. And this is what a lot of people do, and you see the difference when you have a long line. In one for the one above, it's smooth, and for the one below, that jump in the length of the text just because it fit a pixel grid and then another pixel grid. And from this simple idea of texture mapping, it was really a nice idea because in terms of GPU, you only need to render two triangles. with your texture, and you can rotate it, you can scale it to some point, and then you can pack a lot of glyphs inside a texture. So this is one example, and you can fit quite a lot of glyphs into a single texture. And then you can use it in game or even in browser if you want. Of course, the quality is, let's say, okay, because if you have a big magnification of your texture, then you will start to see a lot of artifacts. So it's okay for games, maybe it's not so much okay for, let's say, document. If you use this technique to render a PDF on screen, maybe it's not the best. One way to improve the rendering is to enforce what I call vertical hinting. So explain that hinting. So here on the left, can you see? Okay, no, you cannot see my... So when you have no hinting, you have your shape, okay, as Bezier curve, and behind you have all the pixels that will be on and off depending if you are inside or outside the shape. And on the border, this is where you put some anti-aliasing. For native hinting, so you, the designer of the typeface, for this specific size, say, oh, you have to modify the path just to fit the grid, and it's a bit nicer. But you have also auto-hinting, so you try to compute everything automatically, but it's not as nice as for the native hinting. And the last one is vertical hinting. You only enforce hinting for the in the vertical direction, and you keep it free on the horizontal direction. And when you do that, then you can have very precise rendering because you can position your text with tenths of pixel position. So you don't have to align your text on the pixel grid, you can put it everywhere. Of course, it only works with horizontal text, but it provides you quite a good quality. And then you have another problem, which is called Subpixel Zoo. So there is a nice site that shows you all the different display. So depending if you're on a computer, on a mobile, or some weird mobile, or some weird screen, this is what is really a pixel. So what I'm explaining with anti-aliasing, most of the time we use LCD, so this is the second one. And you take advantage of the fact that really a pixel is LED in blue, green, and red. If you change the order, you have to change your anti-aliasing. And if you have all the weird screens, then it's another problem. So it's I'm not aware of any research for other type of screen, but the idea you have to adapt your anti-aliasing for human perception. Of course, if you have a very high DPI, it's fine because at some point you don't need anti-aliasing anymore. The second technique to render things is to use what is called sign distance fields. And this one also is really nice. So now instead of trying to do the rastering inside a texture, we will compute the distance to the shape. So for example, here you have an R, and what we will do, we can compute for pixel outside, we say, oh, the distance is, I don't know, 10 pixels. When you are inside, it will be a negative distance. And using this kind of information, we can decide inside the GPU if the pixel is outside or inside or in the border. And when you are on the border, then we can apply the anti-aliasing. So here you have a rendering, so this is the same encoding. And we can also grow the shape a bit, or we can make it fuzzy. We can do all kinds of things. So it has been introduced in almost 20 years ago. And this is one example when you have the alpha blended, mean you use just the texture directly, and you see there is a lot of artifacts. And on the right, you have the same texture, but it's not actually the glyph, it's the sign distance that has been encoded into the texture. And just because of this transformation, we can render the glyph properly. And Chlemsky, 10 years ago, improved the techniques because in a texture you have four channels, RGBA. Actually, you can encode much more information. And this is what it just did. So it's called multiple channel SDF. And then you have a much higher precision. So you see the difference. Here, this is a multiple channel. And you have a proper rendering of the letter A. This is when you have single channel, same size, and when you render with SDF, the quality is not so good. So MSDF is quite a nice improvement, and it's really fast to compute. And this is one example when you project it in this case, you have a crisp rendering of the texture. Another way to do it, I talk about Bezier curve, and Bezier curve are quite difficult to handle because they don't have nice properties. What you can do is you can try to approximate Bezier curve with arc circles. And if you can do that, then it's really easy to compute the distance to a circle. Compared to Bezier, it's much easier. So the difficulty is to try, given a set of Bezier curve, how can you transform them into arc circles? And if you can do that, then your problem is solved. So this is what Bédard et Swaboud did with a Gliffy. And then you can encode everything inside. So I won't detail everything, but this is what it looks like behind. So this is what is handled on the GPU inside the shader. You have extra information to render a glyph. And it works quite well, but the problem is you have to compute this approximation. And now the third technique, which is maybe the most used today because the GPU are quite powerful now, and also we have what is called compute shaders. So before compute shaders, we can just do some graphic operation with a GPU. Now we have a complete pipeline where we can compute things. And the idea is that we won't pre-render anything. We will send information to the GPU and it will compute what is necessary. And one of the most well-known algorithms, it's called from Loop and Blin. And this is how to render Bezier curve into independent of a resolution. And so this is what it looks like when you have a letter E like this. So first, for the interior of the glyph, it's only a bunch of triangles. And for the curve, this is where they added this specific shader that is patented, by the way. Well, now it's no more patented, but at that time it was patented. And this is what you can do. And this was kind of a revolution because it's very fast. For the shader, it's very fast to compute this. And so now it's only a matter of describing a set of triangles, a set of a Bezier curve, and then you can render it. And people improve these techniques. So you have all kind of pre-processing. And you can render, again, any glyph. So one of the... Okay, this is one example of what is really happening on the shader. So of course it's only not even a few milliseconds. So the libraries that are using these are mostly two of them from my knowledge. One is called Slug library, and in this case is encoding all the glyph with a specific format that is sent to the GPU, and then it can render real time without too much problem. Of course, depending on the complexity of your typeface, it will take more time. So for example, the Wildwood typeface, there is a lot of ornaments everywhere. And of course, it means more Bezier curve and you have to process them, which is not the case with previous techniques, because with previous techniques, you pre-render things and then you can do it any time. But still, it's pretty fast. So it's not open source, unfortunately. And the other well-known is Pathfinder. It's called coded in Rust, and in and it's fast. And this is more or less the same set of techniques. The idea is you want to to send all the information on the GPU, and the GPU can do everything for you. Of course, you have still to take into account shaping, etc. So those kind of techniques are used, for example, when you are in a browser, so you need a fast text engine to render your text. I will stop here, but so as I explained, so there are many available techniques, and the choice is really dependent on what you are trying to achieve. So, for example, if you're doing a game, maybe it's fine to have text as a font, or maybe SDF, it's fine. And of course, if you're running a document online with a lot of typography or mathematical formula, etc., you want to have a very very fine rendering. Pathfinder, so there's a third version, Struglary and MSDF, they are maybe the main players. MSDF, so this is multiple channel SDF, because it's very easy to implement. So there is an open source library, you compute the distance to the glyph, which is provided by the library. It will encode everything, and then you have only one shader and a problem solved. For the other one, for Pathfinder and Slug, it's a bit more complicated, because you have to take a lot of things into account, because even with Bezier curve, you can have some very specific case. Inting, so this is when you fit your text to the pixel grid, is still needed, because there are still around some screen with not so high DPI, and so you want to adapt to have a better rendering. And also anti-aliasing, it's still needed until we get DPI with over 600, maybe. So, well, we need to test it. And complex text layout, so this is the shaping, it's really difficult. So you cannot really do it yourself. You have to use this Arfbrowse library if you want to have a proper rendering of any language on the planet. And also, one of the problems is there are a lot of patents around. So depending where you are on the planet, you don't care about the software patent, or you care, and then it's you have to wait a few years. Thank you for your attention. So I prepared my own question. So if you have other questions, so maybe one thing I didn't talk at all about is variable fonts, because there is a talk tomorrow in the afternoon by Bernd, and variable fonts are just a nightmare. Nightmare, because now instead of having a static glyph, you have to adapt at every frame. So the Congress, so there is a nice logo with a lot of nice effect, and when you animate this, it means you have to recompute everything every time. Thank you.
Thank you so much for this really wonderful deep dive into text rendering. I was also not expecting to learn as much as I did. We have time for Q&A. You can see microphones out here. So if you have a question for a speaker, please make your way to one of the labeled microphones and we will call you out. In the meantime, do we have a question from the Signal Angel? Yes, we do. Signal Angel, what do you have for us?
The internet wants to know how much more computationally intensive is rendering compared to hinting and shaping. So is rendering the bottleneck by far?
Good question. I think the rendering now is quite fast, and especially because the GPU are more and more powerful. The shaping might be the longest part, but at least the shaping, if you don't transform your text too much, you do it once, when you render a PDF, you compute the shaping, and then you can zoom, scale, and everything. So it's not on the same stage. Now, if you in a word processor and you type things, you have to recompute shaping on at least by part to take this into account. But I think the rendering is really, really fast now because of the power of the GPU inside either mobile or your computer. But this needs to be checked, actually.
Thank you. Mic number two, please.
How font specific is text shaping, and does things like having a sign distance field for a font, can this help shaping itself?
Sorry, I'm not sure.
How font specific is text shaping? Do you need? You mentioned that that you can do shaping ahead of time.
So the shaping is specific to the language. So you have to, for example, for Arabic. So when you decode the text, you have all the glyph. When you use free type, you read, not even free type, you read all your glyph, and then you have to call the shaping and say, okay, you have this character and this character next to each other, you have to replace by this glyph. Then you have another character, it say, oh, no, forget about previous, now you have to link everything together. So this is for Arabic, but it's also true for Hindi, for Sanskrit. So each language might have different rules, and then of course your typeface need to have those glyphs. So if you do not have the glyphs, then it's, for example, in Latin, at least for in French, we have the FF, which is it's called ligature, and so you can replace double F by this specific glyph. But if your font do not provide this double F, then either you have a fallback and you go to FF, or you put the tofu and...
Thank you.
Mike one?
I wanted to ask if for hinting in all of the examples you gave, it looked like the only thing that was changing was where the glyph outline was positioned. And I wanted to ask, it often seems like the glyph also gets its shape changed and squished and things like that. Does that also happen with hinting?
For example, when you use when you compute the when you render the glyph using either a distance field or using CPU, you can change the. For example, if you want to add the outline to your glyph, you can do that in the shader. You can, if you want to have oblique. So you, for example, you you can play a bit with the shape of the glyph, and for example, you can make it fuzzy. If you want to have, for example, drop shadow on your glyph, first you compute a very fuzzy anti-alias on your glyph, and you put the actual glyph on top of it. So once you do things on the shader using either GPU rendering or SDF rendering, you can play a lot with a shape. But if you want really to transform your, your A into B, then it's a bit different. And we'll see tomorrow, for example, for variable fonts, you have a typical before variable fonts, you add, for example, a font for bold, a font for light, a font for regular. And now you have a kind of a cursor that allows to go from light to bold, and then you can play with the actual shape of your glyph.
I meant something different, but I will let everybody else.
Maybe let's go for the question at mic two that's been waiting.
Oh, thank you. I was mostly wondering about those three kind of text rendering that you presented. Whenever you start to introduce opacity in your rendering pipeline, which one would you think is the most friendlier? If that makes sense?
Yeah, so for opacity, if you use a sign for texture and sign distance field, you can cope with it, because inside the GPU you have different model of it's called alpha composition, and so you can play with with that to a proper rendering. When you with the CPU, I think it's also working because you don't have self intersection inside the glyph, so it should work properly. Difficulty is when you have anti-aliasing with opacity which is not fully opaque, then you have to adapt your anti-aliasing to the opacity, which might be a bit tricky in some cases. But yeah, most of the time it's working okay with opacity.
Thank you.
Let's head over to mic number three.
Hi. I was curious if you have like experiences or opinions on how to deal with cursor positions when you also have ligatures, like when editing text.
No, sorry. Experiences with?
When you have like ligatures, yeah. How do you find the cursor position when you're going through the text? Because suddenly two letters that I want to go in between are only one grapheme.
Yeah, good question.
If you like, don't have experience with that, that's totally fine.
I implemented ligature, and I think I just replaced the glyph. Because in the font, when you have when you put a glyph, you have the what is called the advance, and say how much you need to advance. And I think it's quite automatic, because with a ligature, so for example, for the 2F, you'll get an advance information that is related to this specific glyph.
Yep.
So things should be okay. What I didn't check, for example, if you have kerning after a ligature, so I think I didn't take this case into account in my rendering. I'm sure Halfbrowse does that, but
I've been working with Halfbrowse, but it's also a big beast, so always a bit hard. Thank you.
Yeah, no, good point.
Mic number four.
Hi. I was wondering if you said that for Bayesian curves, they're really hard to compute, and you can approximate them with arc circles instead. Do you know any file formats that actually store the pre-computed arc circles ahead of time to save that computation? Would that be advantageous? Or I know that Bayesian curves are like the standard, but I kind of wonder if maybe they're, you know, storage space is cheap, so even if arc circles are like larger, maybe it makes sense to actually build a file format that is.
For font, I'm not aware of any format, but I suspect for other softwares that deal with geometric shape, maybe there's a specific format. And the easiest for us would be to convince typesetter, okay, forget about Bayesian curve and do everything with circles.
Yeah.
But I'm sure they won't do that. But I'm not aware of any format. But that could be, you take a font file and you just record everything, and that would be easier.
Okay. And that work can always be done ahead of time?
Yeah, so for Gliffy, he was doing that just in time. Mm. But it takes quite a long time to compute the approximation.
Yeah.
Once you have the approximation, it's fine.
Okay.
But it means, for example, if you have a new font, you need to pre-process the font to do all the approximation. Yeah. Then you're okay. But
okay. Yeah. So you could like do it at compile time and then bake it into your game or something.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. If you can, this is also for SDF. You just pre-compute everything and you store your font has those signed distance field, and you could do the same with the arc circles and read it. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.